Hail and welcome to A is for Agrimony, coffee-stained notes on witchcraft. You know, it just occurred to me that on my website and in my shop, which is due for a restock and a reopening any day now, just so you know, I frequently shorten the name of this whole operation to AIFA, A-I-F-A. I might as well start calling it that, save myself a half a second. I don't know. Welcome to AIFA. Sounds weird? I don't know. I like it. Okay. Welcome to AIFA. I am your host, Margot. Welcome back and happy Friday if you're listening to this on the day that it is released. Happy weekend. The month is coming to an end in just a couple days, so be sure to start April off right by blowing some cinnamon into your most used entryway. And Mercury goes retrograde on Monday, April 1st, but you may have already noticed a little bit of discombobulation, communication breakdowns, speech challenges, and technology meltdowns because we've been in the shadow period that both precedes and follows the retrograde. A great way to learn a little bit more about this, especially for all you podcast listeners, is to check out Two Geminis and Leo, if you haven't already. They have a Mercury retrograde survival guide that is sure to help you get through this next few weeks without having a communication conniption. Also, they're pretty damn funny, so enjoy that. April 1st, of course, is also the dreaded April Fool's Day. If there is any day of the year that completely captures just how much of a curmudgeon I am capable of being, it's April Fool's Day, because I hate it. I think one time when I was young, I pranked my mom, and that did not end well at all. Of course, I think I took it too far. I made it look like I had accidentally chopped my thumb off with a steak knife, and I even staged it with fake blood and all. I told you I took it too far, and that did not end well for me. So after that, I kind of just let the years go by quietly and peaceably, ignoring April Fools, until eventually it started to grate on my own nerves. And I'm not even sure why, because I like a good prank. But something about the entire day dedicated to everyone being a prankster just makes me want to wave my broom at everyone and ignore the world till the insanity is over. I told you, it brings out the curmudgeon in me. So let's get past that mess, and then we'll be smooth sailing on the waning moon until the new moon in Aries and total solar eclipse on Monday, April 8th at 2:21 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The eclipse will darken the daytime sky in some parts of the world, but when the light returns, so will some much-needed clarity. So let's brush up on this real quick. During solar eclipses, the moon is directly between the Earth and the sun, and this is also referred to as a conjunction of the sun and moon. And during this brief time, the moon can block out the sun's light, temporarily disconnecting us from what is typical in our day-to-day and, in essence, our sense of reality. Now, solar eclipses always occur at new moons when the moon and the sun are in the same sign of the zodiac, which happens roughly every 29 days, but rarely does the moon block the sun, as seen from the Earth, as it will during a solar eclipse. Now, about this particular eclipse. Eclipses come in pairs, as a duo of opposite signs. And what sign is opposite Aries? Libra. So since the Aries new moon and hybrid eclipse on April 20th, 2023, we've been on a cycle of eclipses on the Aries-Libra axis. And these are the zodiac signs that rule war, Aries ruled by Mars, and peace, Libra ruled by Venus. And these two signs in combination can help us work through that balance. Balance, balance, balance. Something the world is in dire need of. Come on. Come on. So remember, we just had that Libra lunar eclipse on March 25th, and it brought forth a call to examine our relationships and take a deep look at how we are coexisting with the individuals in our lives, especially those who have very different values than we might. Ugh. But now this upcoming total solar eclipse is also an Aries new moon, and an Aries new moon propels us forward in a blaze of hellfire. well, maybe it's not that intense, but it may drive us all to take action, forcefully moving forward in the path of our destiny. With or without those relationships, we started analyzing at the full moon lunar eclipse. And remember, these relationships can be with friends, lovers, family members, coworkers, and so on. But they can also be relationships with the self, with a course of action, a current situation, or a status. Anything that we feel tethered to has come under scrutiny. And that's where the clarity comes in. After the darkness will come the light, literally as well as metaphorically. And so now might be the time for some change and some action. Now, there is much more to learn about this eclipse if you wish to, especially considering it's all happening right next door to Chiron, the wounded healer, who has been transitioning through our warrior leader, Aries, since 2018. Chiron helps us take our hardships and our trauma and unlock the wisdom that can be taken from these situations. So I'm interested to see if there are any shifts that might be taking place in the world at large at this time, not just within myself. It could be very interesting or terrifying. Who knows? One thing to keep in mind, in the spirit of the fearless leader that is Aries, is it may be time for you to blaze your own trail and refocus your efforts in the relationship department on the individuals and or the activities and situations that are truly meaningful to you, which, after the lunar eclipse, you might have a better understanding of. Or you could sleep in and treat yourself and hope for the best. Okay, shall we move on to today's topic? I'm thinking I might be calling this one the three C's because I want to discuss candles and candle magic. And you can't really discuss it without exploring color and color magic. And on top of that comes caromancy or wax divination. Now, I realize as I've been pushing forward with this podcast that I want to be careful to cover as many of the basics as possible before I start going deeper. And we are still very much in basics territory, and it's about time we discussed candle magic. So here we are. Candle magic is a form of sympathetic magic. And I'm realizing now that I should most definitely explain sympathetic magic for those of you who might like to get a refresher on that before moving forward. So, okay, sympathetic magic as a concept comes from anthropology and the study of magic that suggests a connection between objects or actions and their effects on other objects or events. It's based on the principle that like produces like or like attracts like, and it operates on the idea that by manipulating one object or performing a certain action, one can influence another object or event that is symbolically linked to it. For example, using someone's picture in a spell to bring them good luck, the picture being the sympathetic link for the individual whom you are sending good fortune to. You may have seen or heard of hair, nail clippings, or even poppets used in this way as well. Molded candles also come into this in a big way and is an appropriate mention here, as is the use of twine to bind an object that in relationship to an individual may produce the effect of binding them as well. Say, if the individual is engaging in harmful activity. We all remember, I bind you, Nancy, from doing harm, harm against other people, and harm against yourself. From the craft. Maybe. The original craft, not the David Duchovny craft. I'm old. So, we have here the law of similarity, which states that things that resemble each other are believed to have a connection or influence with one another. For example, a poppet or handmade doll that is made in the likeness of an individual may be used in sympathetic magic rituals to affect that person's current situation, well-being, or fate. Similarly, and historically, using a model or effigy of an animal in a hunting ritual may be believed to influence the success of the hunt. And then we have the law of contagion, which states that objects that have been in contact with each other continue to have a connection even after they are separated. For example, hair, nail clippings, or personal belongings of an individual may be used in sympathetic magic rituals as what is sometimes referred to as a tag lock to exert influence over that person. Similarly, items associated with a specific event or individual, such as a piece of clothing or a photograph, as mentioned before in my dated reference, may be used to affect the outcome of that event or individual's life. So that is what lies behind the idea of sympathetic magic, in short, anyway. So studied by anthropologists and practiced by magical practitioners all over the world and throughout history, sympathetic magic is used in rituals related to healing, fertility, protection, hexing, hunting, and all other aspects of daily life. And it reflects our fundamental human beliefs about the interconnectedness of the physical and the spiritual worlds, as well as the power of symbolism and ritual in influencing outcomes. It's witchcraft, baby. Okay, so candle magic is a form of sympathetic magic that involves using candles as a focal point for intention setting, manifestation, and ritual work. It's a practice found in many, many cultures and traditions around the world, and just about every tradition of witchcraft and magic, and has ancient roots. The practice likely originated from early humans' observation of the power of fire and its transformative properties. Fire played a central role in religious and spiritual practices in ancient civilizations and was revered for its transformative properties and its connection to the divine. Early humans used fire for warmth, protection, and cooking, but they also recognized its spiritual significance. Candle-like objects made from materials such as beeswax, tallow, or animal fat were used in religious ceremonies and rituals as offerings to gods and spirits. The ancient Egyptians were known to use candles or torches made from reeds and animal fats in their religious ceremonies and funerary rites. They believed that light helped guide the spirits of the deceased to the afterlife. And both ancient Rome and Greece incorporated candles into their religious practices, and they were often lit as offerings to deities in temples, shrines, and during festivals. The goddess Hestia, keeper of the hearth, was honored with the lighting of candles in ancient Greek households. For the ancient Celts, candles themselves would come later on, but fire itself was extremely sacred, as they relied on fires, bonfires, and torches for illumination and warmth, as well as for ceremonies and rituals. These fires held significant spiritual and symbolic meanings for the Celts, representing purification, protection, and the transition between seasons. Think of the fire festivals. Now, candle magic, as it is recognized today, began to emerge during the Middle Ages. And during this time, candles were used not only for illumination, but also as tools for spiritual practices within religions such as Christianity. Churches and monasteries used candles in religious rituals, symbolizing the presence of the divine light and the Holy Spirit, which, let's be honest, is candle magic. You know what I'm saying? You pray over those candles, you go off. And in medieval and Renaissance Europe, alchemists and practitioners of Hermeticism incorporated candles into their esoteric practices. Candles were seen as vessels for concentrating and directing spiritual energies, as well as for illuminating the practitioner's inner journey towards enlightenment and spiritual transformation. Now, candle magic also became further developed and refined within the context of witchcraft and folk magic traditions. In medieval and early modern Europe, practitioners of witchcraft utilized candles in their spells and rituals for purposes such as healing, protection, divination, and influencing outcomes. And by the time we reach the 20th and 21st centuries, candle magic experienced a revival alongside the resurgence of interest in various forms of occultism, witchcraft, and esoteric spirituality. Today, candle magic is practiced by individuals of diverse spiritual backgrounds, including Wiccans, pagans, practitioners of modern witchcraft, folk practitioners, and even those interested in New Age spirituality. Throughout its evolution, the central premise of candle magic remains the same, however, and that is harnessing the transformative power of fire and intention to manifest desired outcomes and connect with the divine. All right, so candles are rich in symbolism, representing elements such as fire, light, illumination, transformation, spirituality, and the human experience. We've established this. And the color, shape, and size of the candle can also carry specific meanings in candle magic. One of the most fundamental symbols of candles is light itself. Light represents illumination, enlightenment, and the dispelling of darkness. In many spiritual traditions, lighting a candle is symbolic of bringing clarity, wisdom, and understanding to one's life. And as we've said, candles harness the element of fire, which is associated with energy, passion, creativity, and transformation. Fire is both a purifying and a destructive force, representing the power to burn away obstacles and ignite change. Interestingly enough, the latest monthly spell for the Patreon spell tier was an obstacle-clearing candle spell, as a matter of fact. Okay, so candles often used in religious and spiritual practices are used as symbols of divine presence and connection also. The flame of a candle can sometimes be seen as the manifestation of the divine spark within each individual and the symbol of the divine light that guides and sustains the universe. Candles are commonly used in meditation, prayer, and ritual work to create a sacred atmosphere and facilitate spiritual connection. The act of lighting a candle can serve as a ritual in and of itself, marking the beginning of a sacred space and inviting spiritual presence and guidance. And candles are often associated with hope, faith, and resilience in the face of adversity. Lighting a candle in times of darkness or difficulty can symbolize hope for a better future, faith in higher powers, and the belief that light will ultimately triumph over darkness. A lot of the times when a member of my coven shares a difficult situation with the rest of us, we will light a candle for them as a way of influencing the situation for the better and providing energetic love and support when we can't be together. So candles are also used for protection in many spiritual practices. The flame is believed to ward off negative energies and malevolent forces, providing a sense of security and safety, especially a black candle in this case, which we will get to soon. And how about guidance? In some traditions, candles are used as symbols of guidance and direction. A candle flame can serve as a guiding light, leading individuals in their spiritual journey and illuminating the path ahead. Cycles of life. The burning of a candle can sometimes be used to represent the cyclical nature of life, death, and rebirth. As the candle burns down, it symbolizes the passage of time, the impermanence of existence, and the potential for renewal and regeneration. And unity and community. Candles are often used in communal rituals and ceremonies as symbols of unity, solidarity, and shared purpose. Lighting candles together can foster a sense of connection and belonging among participants, symbolizing their collective intentions and aspirations. Overall, candles hold deep symbolic significance in various spiritual and cultural contexts, serving as powerful tools for transformation, for connection, and for spiritual expression. So, how do we engage in candle magic? And how does color come into play? Before I move forward, I want to start off by recommending a book for anyone who really wants to dive into candle magic or feels like they could use some reference material. I really can't recommend anything better than this particular book. It is The Book of Candle Magic by Madame Pamita, Candle Spell Secrets to Change Your Life. And this is a little thick boy. I love this book. It literally has everything candle magic related packed into it. And I think that it is absolutely necessary if you want to learn everything there is to learn about candle magic, focus your practice on candle magic, or just have a really great candle magic reference on hand. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. And I'm actually going to read a very small portion of it in a little while. And the other book that I want to recommend is useful if you want to dive into actually making candles yourself. There's a little bit on candle making in the other book as well, but this one is Magical Candle Crafting, and that is by Ember Grant. Create Your Own Candles for Spells and Rituals. Both of these books are absolutely wonderful. I highly recommend them both, especially the Madame Pomita. It is a really great book to have and to reference over and over again. So, how do we engage in candle magic? I would say that the fundamental aspect of candle magic is setting intentions. What am I lighting this candle for? For what purpose am I engraving, anointing, dressing, charging, lighting, and meditating and/or visualizing over this candle for? Practitioners typically focus their thoughts and energy on a specific goal or desire while preparing, charging, and lighting their spell candle. The candle serves as a physical representation of the intention, and as it burns, it is believed to release the energy into the universe and/or the spirit realm. So yes, you can light a candle as an offering to Venus every Friday, perhaps a pink candle, and perhaps even better, a pink candle anointed with a love oil. And in that case, your intention is the offering to Venus herself, and that's all there is to it. It's a simple yet effective and sacred act of reverence. But when it comes to spell work, the intention is where we start. I just had a job interview, and I want to work a spell that will help bring some luck my way. I've been feeling ready to get back into the relationship pool, so I want to bring some love energy into my life. Shit's getting weird in this house, and I feel uneasy, so I want to banish unwanted or harmful energy and clear the space to make way for the good stuff again. This is where we begin. Now, from here, you may want to consider special timings like moon phases, days of the week, hours of the day, and so on. Some practitioners align their candle magic with specific moon phases or planetary influences, employing these cosmic energies to enhance the effectiveness of their spells. And if you're new here, you can check out my episode on moon magic and my series on daily magic for some extra information in those areas. Now, this brings us to color magic, because it's just one layer and potentially a very important layer in candle magic. Because you can burn a tea light or a birthday candle for a quick and simple spell, a chime, a votive, or a taper if you prefer them, or a big killer, or a big pillar, or a 7-day candle if you want to make a big gesture. But then you can start to energetically strengthen and focus your magic with color, anointing, dressing, engraving, and of course, charging. So let's take a quick dive into color magic, and then we'll pick back up where we left off with candle magic in general before discussing caromancy and wrapping up. I don't know why I feel I need to explain where we are and where we're going. Maybe you might need a bathroom break. I don't know. I generally bring my podcasts into the loo with me. But hey, this is your You Are Here map moment. Okay, so color magic. I only want to touch upon color magic here because it doesn't serve anyone to discuss candle magic without covering color magic and correspondences at least a little bit. But color magic can and does go much, much deeper than simple correspondences. In fact, my good friend Coco, who you can find at moonflower.spirit on Instagram, taught a color magic workshop at Anhata's Purpose, I believe 2 years ago now, that opened me up to a whole world of color magic that I didn't even realize existed. There are ways that we can work with color in not just our magic, but in our daily lives, our mental well-being, and every facet of our spirituality that is very much worth diving into. Coco is a rainbow color witch, as well as a Reiki master and a tarot reader, and offers essence of color readings, as well as many other amazing services, and I highly recommend her as your destination if you are interested in having that wide world of color magic opened up to you. She is truly wonderful. But for the sake of this episode, however, we are going to go over some basic elements of each color as they pertain to basic color magic. or candle magic specifically, their elemental and astrological influences, and how you can incorporate color magic into your candle magic. So let's start with white and black, not technically colors per se, black being the absence of color and white being all light and color. But nonetheless, they are major players in the realm of color magic. So white. I want to begin by saying if you only have white candles and your budget doesn't allow for you to gather all the colors of the rainbow, you are perfectly fine. Because, and I will only say this once because I hate the concept of catch-all anything, like the dreaded rosemary is an all-purpose herb that you can use for any spell. That's simply not true. I find the concept of catch-all anything to be reductive and lazy in its least harmful form and outright disrespectful to the spirits we work with in its most harmful form. So you won't hear me saying it here. An argument could be made for clear quartz, and I'm absolutely not saying you must go out and purchase all the things. That's no way to practice. But I am saying get acquainted with the spirits of the items that you work with, and you will see how incredibly unique that they really are, and then you won't be so quick to generalize them in that way. All this I'm saying, however, with the exception of the white candle. A white candle or a standard wax-colored candle is, in fact, suitable for any of your endeavors. I like to incorporate color into my magic, but if I was hard-pressed and all I had was white, I would indeed be just fine. So as we know, white is the reflection of all light and all color, and therefore it can and does hold within it all the properties of that light and color. That being said, white does have its own inherent properties, and here they are. So, elemental associations with all the elements. White is associated with earth, air, fire, and water. White has special associations with the moon and the lunar goddess, as well as the high priestess and the moon tarot cards, as well as the suit of swords, which is ruled by air. The days of the week associated with white are Monday and Sunday, ruled by the moon and the sun. And white can be used for the purposes of cleansing, clarity, blessing, healing, innocence, truth, connection to spirits or the spiritual world, divine connection, consecration, dream work, psychic connection, purity, moon magic, angelic work, harmony, prayer, peace, purification, universal truth, and again, any purpose if white is all that you have on hand. Okay, so black. Black, as opposed to white, is the absence of all light and color, absorbing rather than reflecting, and as such, it is able to either absorb or banish unwanted, negative, or harmful energy. And as there are two sides to every coin, it's also the color of choice for some baneful magic, so it can protect and shield as well as harm or destroy. Some associations with black include the planets Saturn and Pluto, as well as the gods Pluto and Hades. The elements of earth and water, think of the deep earth and waters where light may not reach, but life springs like a womb. The devil tarot card and some deities like Hecate, the Morrigan, and Kali, among many others, in the days of the week, Saturday and Tuesday, ruled by Saturn and Mars, and the zodiac signs Scorpio and Capricorn. And black can be used for the purposes of banishing, transformation, uncrossing, endings, domination, protection, reversing, repulsion, freedom from evil, cursing, cloaking, security, emotional safety, closure, breaking patterns, grief, mourning, absorbing, removing, trapping, encasing, shielding from the evil eye. All right, blue. Associations with blue include the element of water and the planets Jupiter, Neptune, and the moon. In the tarot, it is associated with the star and the suit of cups, ruled by water. Days of the week are Monday and Thursday, ruled by the moon and Jupiter, and zodiac signs are Pisces and Cancer. And blue can be used for the purposes of reconciliation, harmony, peace, kindness, healing, ideas, intelligence, wisdom, loyalty, sleep, meditation, communication, creativity, dream work, trust, blessings, calm, forgiveness, truth, bliss, inspiration, fidelity, and honesty. Moving on to brown. I love brown for animal magic, but it has much more than just that to offer. So associations include the earth element and earth itself, as well as Saturn, zodiac signs Capricorn and Virgo, and in the tarot, the hermit and the suit of pentacles. We can use brown in candle magic for justice, balance, grounding, court cases, legal matters, being down to earth, practical matters, seriousness, reliability, support, stability, safety, earth, nature, animals, home, nostalgia, and balance. Okay, we're moving on to gold. Gold, this one is easy because of all the associations we already feel with gold. This is the color of the sun and the sun god or deity. Also with that comes the zodiac sign of Leo and the day of the week, Sunday, ruled by the sun. The elements of fire rule over gold, and the tarot cards associated with it are, of course, the sun and strength. And the magic that can be worked with the color gold includes prosperity, fame, luxury, generosity, optimism, wisdom, enlightenment, victory, sun magic, confidence, life force, power, attraction, magnetism, vigor, and charisma. Moving on from gold, we come to gray. Gray gives Saturn, as well as Mercury and the moon. So we have Cancer, Capricorn, Virgo, and Libra come to mind here, and so do the elements of water and air. The Devil tarot card is present here again, and since Saturn is, so is the day of the week, Saturday, a day when lots of what we may refer to as gray magic may be preferably worked. Gray is useful for magic that involves neutrality, neutralizing, invisibility, working in gray areas, anonymity, hiding from others, working in between worlds, secrets, occult and arcane wisdom, reversing, uncovering mysteries and secrets, lifting curses, and undoing prior spell work. All right, green, my favorite color. So green is associated with Earth and Venus, as well as the element of Earth. The zodiac's Earth signs come to play here. Taurus, Capricorn, and Virgo come up with green, and so do the days of the week, Thursday and Friday. And tarot cards include the Empress. I actually have a big green fluorite sphere named Empress. The Hierophant and the Suit of Pentacles. And we can incorporate green into magic for prosperity, abundance, wealth, generosity, money, luck, career, growth, fertility, gambling luck, business, a good job, harmony, balance, healing, self-love, altruism, universal love, contact with the fae, and contact with nature spirits. All right, and now we're moving on to orange. Sunny and happy orange is associated with the fire element, as well as Mars and the sun. Zodiac signs include Sagittarius and Leo, and the days of the week, Sunday and Tuesday. Tarot cards include the Lovers and the Suit of Wands. And orange can be helpful in magic associated with new opportunities, new ventures, new beginnings, a change of plans, encouragement, opening the way, removing blocks, physical comfort, warmth, security, ambition, creativity, courage, and optimism. Now we're on to pink, purest love. Pink is associated with Venus, the elements of air and fire, and the days Friday and Sunday, as well as the zodiac signs Taurus and Libra, both ruled by Venus. We tend to bring pink into our magic when we are working for romantic love, friendship, soulmates, sweet feelings, emotional healing, heart connection, affection, family love, admiration, physical tranquility, nurturing, warmth, youthfulness, healing grief, compassion, forgiveness, beauty, and unconditional love. Which brings us to purple, the color of magic. Purple is associated with the water element and the planet Jupiter, as it is a royal color, and also Neptune. The day of the week associated with purple is Jupiter ruled Thursday, of course, and the tarot card is the Wheel of Fortune. Zodiac sign is also, of course, Jupiter ruled Sagittarius. And in magic, purple shows up for empowerment, controlling, commanding, mastery, power, ambition, achievement, charisma, luxury, expansion, psychic ability, spirituality, authenticity, truth, transformation, insight, justice, wisdom, politics, divination, ESP, intuition, wishes, and influence. On to big red. Red is associated with fire, of course, and the planet Mars, but also the planet Venus. Tuesday, ruled by Mars, is the day of the week with the strongest association, and zodiac signs are Aries, Scorpio, Sagittarius, and Leo. Tarot card associations include the Devil, the Emperor, and the Suit of Wands, and red can be of assistance in magic for passionate love, energy, action, attraction, sexuality, magnetism, will, force, anger, fire within, courage, warmth, lust, drive, pleasure, vitality, vigor, excitement, desire, and war. All right, we are on to silver. Big lunar and stellar energy with silver. Associations include the moon as well as Mercury. Elements are water and air. Days of the week, Monday and Wednesday, ruled by the moon and Mercury also. And zodiac signs, Aquarius, Cancer, and Gemini. Tarot card associations include the Chariot, the High Priestess, and the Moon. And we use silver in magic associated with dreams, intuition, psychic work, honor, moon magic, rhythm, cycles, divination, illusions, glamour spells, and wisdom. And finally, we come to yellow. Yellow is associated with the air element, as well as Mercury and the Sun. Days of the week then are Wednesday and Sunday, and zodiac signs are Gemini, Libra, Aquarius, and Leo. Tarot associations are the Fool, the Magician, the Sun, and the Suit of Swords. And yellow shows up in magic when we need to work on optimism, prosperity, happiness, good luck, attraction, success, confidence, visibility, fame, self-esteem, communication, concentration, focus, inspiration, intellect, logic, memory, knowledge, and learning. Whew. Like I said, we've only just scratched the surface of color magic here today, but for the purposes of candle magic, this is a really great primer. So, making our way back to candle magic, we've established our intention and we've chosen a candle color. Now we can zhuzh this baby up a bit. I should say, though, that at this point, you can hold your candle, charge it, speak an incantation, or say a prayer, light it, and be on your way. But there are so many additional ways, like I said before, that you can strengthen and focus your magic. So let's go further. Let's engrave the candle with some words or some symbols that align with our intentions. You can use a small blade, a fancy engraving tool, or fork, whatever works for you. This is a great way to get acquainted with sigil work, astrological symbols, or start building your own system of symbolism. If you're working on a money spell on a Thursday, a great day for that, you can incorporate dollar signs as well as the symbol for Jupiter, as that is the planet that rules over Thursday, as well as abundance and prosperity. You can get creative here and use names, words, or phrases as well. This is an added layer of meaning, intention, and focused power and energy. Okay, so we carved the bad boy. Let's dress this candle, starting with anointing it. Now, when we anoint a candle, we essentially coat it in a substance, which could be a carrier oil, an anointing oil, a special water, or even your own saliva. This act adds extra potency and power to your intention, and also readies the candle to be dressed with herbs or salts, giving it a surface that these extra elements can stick to. I like to use an anointing oil, preferably one that I've made myself, or one that I've purchased from a trusted source, and anoint the candle from the base to the wick with a nice thin coating. Now, you're going to come across practitioners that say you have to anoint the candle from the wick down, or from the base up, or from the midway point in both directions, or differently depending on the nature of your intentions. I do it the same exact way every time, with the exception of a double action reversal candle, which is something that I'm going to cover when I reach part three of protection magic. It won't be covered here today, unfortunately. And some practitioners might scream after hearing that, but it's what I do. My intentions and the energy that I'm putting into my candle spell is radiating off of my hands. So that is the method that I use to administer my anointing oil every time. And you may feel differently, and I encourage you to explore different methods until you find what works for you. Okay, we're anointed. Time for dressing. Here is where our knowledge of herbs, plant spirits, and even some salts will come in handy, and other materials as well. As you know by now, plant spirits are a major part of my practice, and I seldom cast a candle spell that isn't dressed or assisted by any herb of some kind. There are just so many powerful ways that they can show up and assist with our intentions and spell work. And spell work is one way of building not only a relationship with these elements, but building our own UPG, or unverified personal gnosis, because wormwood might work to dispel toxicity for me, but might not show up in the same way for another witch who may have it recorded as doing something else entirely different in their personal record. So we can't possibly go through the plant elements you can use in candle magic, but I will share my method. So I will choose an herb or a few herbs that work well towards my intention, and I will grind them together in my mortar and pestle. This is a good time to speak your intentions, by the way. And then I will spread them out on a plate and roll my anointed candle over them to coat it. If you're working with a candle that is in a glass container, you can poke holes in the top to administer your anointing oil and then sprinkle your intended herbs on top. What's important here is to not turn your candle into a flaming torch. So a little goes a long way. And for this reason, I never anoint my candles with Florida water. Do you know how flammable that stuff is? It will light your ass on fire. So save it for other purposes, please, especially where fire is concerned. So I feel like I might be missing some other way that we can super customize our spell candles, but at this point, we should be seeing how creative this process can be and let our own inspiration guide us. Again, we can light this up and be done, or we can now charge our spell candle. So, charging a candle. When we charge a candle for candle magic, we further infuse the candle with our intention through words, built up energy, meditation or prayer or all of the above before lighting it. So why is charging a candle so important? Well, many would agree that there is a vast difference between a charged and an uncharged candle. And this is where I want to read a small section and an exercise from Madame Pamita's The Book of Candle Magic, which also explains one very effective way to charge a candle. Here goes. Before doing your spell, there are some quick experiments that you can do to demonstrate that there are differences between a charged candle and an uncharged candle. When taking your first baby steps in candle magic, it's useful to be able to see these differences. Remember that the candle itself has no power. It is only a tool holding the imprint of the power put into it so that together you can manifest your intentions in the real world. My colleague Janine of Key and Clover suggested the following beautifully simple experiment that can be used to note the difference in energy in a candle spell. In it, you compare the burn of a candle when it has been charged with your intention and prayer against one that has not been charged with your energy. For this candle charging experiment, you will need 2 birthday candles, a small dish, and matches or a lighter. In the following exercise, you will observe the difference between a candle that you have energetically charged and one that has not been charged. In your high school science class, you might have learned that the procedure for doing an experiment is by having 2 components, one called the control, not modified, and one that is the variable, modified. The experiment itself is the comparison of the two. In this experiment, you're going to charge 1 candle and leave 1 candle unaffected, and see the differences in how they burn. You won't be doing a spell in this experiment. Instead, you will simply infuse 1 candle with your positive energy and leave the other as is. Although, we could say that this is a spell for continued contentment. Take 2 identical birthday candles from the same packet and set them on a table. Close your eyes and rub your palms together until you start to feel some warmth between them. Hold your palms a few inches apart from each other and notice the sensations you feel. Now pick up one of the candles and hold it between your palms. Close your eyes and focus your thoughts in a positive direction. You can visualize a positive time in the past, focus in a confident way on future dreams, or just count your blessings in the present. Feel energy radiating from your hands into the candle. The important part of this experiment is to hold your intention positively, confidently, and without doubt or fear. If you have a hard time with visualization, you can repeat affirmations that reinforce positivity, such as, I am happy, or everything always works out for me. You can also simply feel a sense of well-being, contentment, and peace. If your life is in a state where it's hard to feel those good feelings, then sitting down and writing a list of things that you can be grateful for in your life right now would be a great place to start. Whatever you do, don't skimp on this part. Spend several minutes holding your candle and loading it up with positive energy. If you get distracted, put the candle back down and rub your hands together again. When you get the sense that you are complete and you have held the candle for at least a few minutes of focused energy, the experiment can begin. Affix both candles to a dish. If you are using beeswax candles and the weather is warm, you can affix them by pressing them into the dish. Otherwise, slightly warm the dish or use a match to melt just a little bit of the bottom of the candles and affix them to the plate. Now light both candles and observe how they burn. If you have made a real effort in infusing the one candle energetically, you will see a difference in how it burns. Often people report that the candle burns with a stronger flame, a flame that is more active, or that the charged candle burns faster than the control candle. I love that exercise, and I highly recommend you give it a try if you're new to candle magic, or just for fun. Why not? Shits and gigs. Okay, we are finally ready to light our candle and cast our candle magic spell. Although, one can say this entire process has been part of the spell. And one thing I always want to remember to do when I light my spell candle is visualization. Here is where I visualize my intended goal realized. It's already happened, and I'm seeing my life, my situation, my relationship, etc., as it will be once my spell has been a complete success. Spend some time here with visualization, allowing it to feed into all of the energy that you have already put into this candle spell and guiding it to its intended direction. At this point, whether I let the candle burn all the way down or I extinguish it with the intention of relighting it again at another time, I would consider this simple candle spell complete. And after this candle, okay, so here's the part where we have to talk about disposal. After a candle has burned away completely, practitioners may choose to dispose of the remains in different ways, such as burying them in the earth or disposing of them in running water, depending on the intention of the ritual. I really, really want to implore you to be extremely mindful of the materials you've used and whether it is safe or harmless to a particular environment before doing so, however. In the case of a natural body of water, sorry, but no. There is virtually no situation where introducing strange objects, even natural ones, to a body of water won't somehow throw off or harm the delicate ecosystem in that natural body of water. I learned this by listening to more than just one water priestess or water witch speak on it, and I trust their expertise on the topic. And as far as burying goes, you want to avoid burying paraffin wax and certain ingredients, especially any salts that could be harmful to the soil. I often simply dispose of my spell work in the garbage, which, yes, isn't 100% harmless either, but we all have to do whatever is in our ability to reduce the amount of harm that we might do to the environment. So, like all forms of magic, the effectiveness of candle magic largely depends on the practitioner's belief, focus, and intention. Some people may find profound meaning in the results of candle magic, while others may approach it more skeptically, or as a form of a psychological ritual. Either way, candle magic is versatile and accessible, and an accessible form of magic that can be tailored to individual beliefs and intentions, offering a way for practitioners to connect with their spirituality and manifest positive change in their lives. Unless you want to take it further and observe what happens with the wax after it burns. So let's talk about caromancy before I let you go. Caromancy, also known as ceromancy or wax divination, is a form of divination that involves interpreting patterns formed by melted wax or candle drippings. It's a practice found in various cultures and spiritual traditions around the world. Caromancy has ancient roots and has been practiced in different forms across cultures for centuries. The exact origins are unclear, but it has been documented in diverse cultural contexts, including ancient Greece, Rome, Persia, and various indigenous traditions. Caromancy typically involves melting wax or candle wax and observing the shapes, patterns, and formations that emerge as the wax cools and solidifies. And practitioners may drip the wax into a container of water or onto a flat surface or directly onto a special surface designed for caromancy readings. Interpretation of caromancy readings relies on intuition, on symbolism, and on personal or cultural associations. And practitioners may look for recognizable shapes, symbols, or images in the wax formations and interpret their meanings based on traditional symbolism or their own intuitive insights. The interpretation of caromancy readings can vary widely depending on your background or your personal beliefs and the specific context of this specific reading. Common symbols and motifs found in caromancy include animals, plants, objects, geometric shapes, and abstract patterns, each of which may carry specific meanings or messages. So caromancy can be practiced using different types of wax, including beeswax, paraffin wax, soy wax, and each type of wax may produce different textures, colors, and patterns, which can influence the interpretation of the reading. And in addition to wax or candles, practitioners of caromancy may use various tools and accessories to enhance their readings, such as candle holders, divination trays, or symbolic objects to focus their intentions and energy. Caromancy readings may be performed as part of a ritual, say following your candle magic spell, to glean some sort of information on the efficacy or the outcome of that spell, or a ceremonial practice, often with specific steps or procedures to prepare the space, set intentions, and focus the practitioner's energy. Rituals may incorporate elements such as meditation, prayer, or the invocation of spiritual guides and deities. And the practice can be used for various purposes, including gaining insights into personal challenges, seeking guidance on important decisions, exploring spiritual or metaphysical questions, or connecting with higher wisdom and guidance. You know, this could be another form of divination, just like tarot reading, or runes, or scrying, or the use of a pendulum. As with any form of divination, however, practitioners of caromancy should approach the practice with respect, integrity, and a sense of responsibility. It's important to recognize that divination readings offer guidance and insights, but ultimately, individuals have free will and agency to make their own choices and decisions, of course. So overall, Chiromancy, we've got a versatile and intuitive form of divination that offers individuals a means of accessing deeper insights and diving even deeper into their candle magic. It also accesses wisdom and guidance through symbolic language of the melted wax and the candle drippings. And like other forms of divination, chiromancy can be a powerful tool for self-reflection, for spiritual growth, and for navigating life's challenges and opportunities. So I have to just spout off some safety considerations because we're playing with fire here. Practitioners of candle magic should always prioritize safety. This includes using sturdy candle holders and placing candles on a stable surface, never leaving burning candles unattended, and keeping candles away from flammable materials, remember what I said about Florida water, and out of reach of children or pets. Otherwise, go on. Try it out. Okay, so that is all that I have for you today. Thank you for being here with me. Please be well and have an amazing weekend. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of A is for Agrimony, Coffee Stained Notes on Witchcraft. If you like what you've been hearing, please drop me a review wherever you're listening. If you'd like some more content, please go to aisforagrimony.com, where you can find my blog, episode archive, spells and rituals, the Living Grimoire, and soon to come, the Coven Shop. You can follow me on Instagram at @A_is_for_agrimony, that's an underscore in between each word, over on Threads under the same exact handle, or you can like my Facebook page at facebook.com/aisforagrimony. Want to contact me? Shoot an email to reachmargo@aisforagrimony.com. And if you're interested in some exclusive bonus content, you can join the community over on Patreon at patreon.com/aisforagrimony, where I share early release, unedited video format episodes, weekly collective card readings, monthly spells, occasional bonus content, and more to come. Again, thank you for listening, be well, and have an amazing weekend.